From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Stephen Quayle joins us. We're going to talk about a lot of subjects with Stephen, Giants and everything else that he's covered, including, of course, the shutting down of the grid. It's called GridX, and Stephen will explain. Now, before I get going into tonight's show, I want to welcome back to the airwaves none other than Art Bell. Art started his program tonight after a nearly 11-year hiatus from full-time on-air work on Sirius XM tonight in his three-hour show. Welcome back, Art. And here's what's happening. Besides the 13 people who were killed, 8 people were injured in the very tragic Monday morning shooting at the Washington Navy Yard. 3 of those were injured by gunfire, and others, well, they had other types of injuries, such as contusions and chest pain. Washington, D.C. police are confident that only one person was involved in Monday morning shooting at the Washington Navy Yard, and they are lifting a shelter-in-place order for residents who live nearby. The police chief out there said that authorities believe that Aaron Alexis, a 34-year-old, who was killed after an encounter with security, was the gunman. The FBI identified him as a military contractor from Texas. I'm sure over the next few days, we'll be getting more information about him. I flew back from Boulder, Colorado over the weekend after taping our Beyond Belief television programs. And let me tell you something. There was mud everywhere from landslides and everything because of the heavy rain that had occurred starting on Thursday night. As of right now, they are still searching for nearly 500 people who remain unaccounted for. Now, I would hope that most of those people just simply took off and they don't even know they're being looked for. Authorities fear as many as 6 may be dead, but again, they're looking for 500 people. Scientists have found a very rare and deadly amoeba in the water supply of a Louisiana parish where a child died last month from a brain infection caused by the microscopic organism. Test results from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have confirmed that the amoeba was found in 4 locations of the St. Bernard Parish water system. Now, you live out there. State officials say the water is safe to drink, but can pose a risk of infection if the amoeba enters a person's nose. Now, I don't know what you're going to do about that, because if you take a shower, of course water's going to enter your nose. I just don't know what you're going to do about that. Children living near nuclear power plants do not have an increased risk of developing leukemia. That's according to a study. Experts looked at data from 10,000 children diagnosed under between 5 and 10. And they say there was no increased risk of developing leukemia. U.S. industrial production rose in August as a bounce back in motor vehicle assembly lifted manufacturing. It's a hopeful sign for the economy after growth got off to a very slow start in the third quarter. Let's check in with the expert, investment advisor Mish Shedlock. Well, that's good news, Mish, isn't it?
Absolutely, it's good news, and I think we're going to see more of that. The trade deficit from the United States, I think, is going to shrink. There's oil production here in the United States. We have to look at the other side of the coin, and manufacturing has returned to the United States. But what about the jobs? We're seeing them go to robotics. We're seeing them in not only in manufacturing, but in retail. We're going to all these consumer kiosk terminals. You've probably seen them if you go to Home Depot where you have to self-check out. Or we're seeing software robots at even in places like McDonald's. So the manufacturing is coming back. Some other things are coming back. The trade deficit's going down. But where are the jobs, George?
Well, that's a good point, Mitch, because there aren't a lot of jobs. As a matter of fact, let me tell you a little bit about this following story. And you're going to understand exactly what's happening. Thank you, Mish. The gap in employment rates between America's highest and lowest income families has now stretched to its widest levels since officials began tracking the data a decade ago, according to an analysis of government data, according to the Associated Press. That's not good news. That gap widens. The rich and the poor could be a problem. Well, look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's not Superman. It's probably a chemtrail. And up next, William Thomas joins us. We'll spend the hour talking about what's in the sky on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. William Thomas with us this hour, award-winning journalist, specializes in news at the mainstream media, just doesn't touch. He's the author of a number of books, including Chemtrails Confirmed. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. William, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much, George. Great to be back with you and our listeners tonight.
You too, William. And let me ask you something. You were the one who coined the term chemtrails, were you not, back in 89?
That's right. I used that term for the first time while reporting for Environment News Service.
Now, what's it called? Still called chemtrails, or are we changing that?
I'm changing my use of the term. I think it's time that we bump up the discussion and enter the scientific debate. I'm now talking about what they're talking about, atmospheric aerosols, atmospheric aerosol geoengineering.
And tell me why we're calling it that now.
Well, the idea of geoengineering is now out of the closet and is being discussed and urged openly from the United States across Europe and beyond. While chemtrails, that term continues to be denigrated by the media. And for respectability and for scientific credibility, I think that all of us in this movement are going to get much more traction using the proper term atmospheric aerosols, and also the term geoengineering, which is what this 15-year ongoing program is all about.
You know, some people, William, will say, you know, I'm not so sure about chemtrails. You wake up in the morning one day, let's say on a Monday, William, and the skies are just peppered with these chemtrails, you know, tic-tac-toe marks all around the skies. The next day there may be nothing. The next day they're back again. Here's the argument, I think, for chemtrails, and that is, you know what, if it's a regular jet, right, the jets fly the normal patterns every day, you're going to have the same kind of jet vapors on a Monday as you would on a Tuesday and a Wednesday. We're not seeing that. We're seeing them, you know, scattered around. One day they're up there, the next day they're not. These things have got to be chemtrails, or as you would now say, aerosol.
I would absolutely agree. Commercial airliners, as we all know, for cost efficiency, fly straight point to point. They don't crisscross the sky. They certainly don't fly in formation, and they don't make head-on passes at each other that we often see in connection with plumes that, unlike condensation trails, linger for many hours until they obscure the entire sky. There's no question that these are not normal condensation trails, George, especially at this time of year when it's simply too warm and too dry at altitude for normal condensation trails to form. Quickly further, we have admissions from a senior FAA air traffic control manager and radar technicians that these are U.S. Air Force tankers leaving reflective particles in the sky.
Are we going to get more whistleblowers on this, William? Are we going to get some pilots coming forward to talk about what they're doing? Maybe they did this and they're retired now?
We're getting closer, George. I've just been in touch with three retired Air Force pilots, and commercial airline pilots, one of whom I interviewed extensively on tape. While none of these three gentlemen were actively involved or had firsthand knowledge of the aerosol spraying program, they all independently and unanimously agreed that what we're seeing are not contrails. Interesting, George, one of the Air Force pilots taught meteorology for the Air Force pilots. So he's well-schooled in what goes on in the sky, and he told me directly those aren't contrails.
What do we think they are, William? What exactly is going on? You know, we've heard the theories. We've talked to you about these. you know, weather modification, manipulation. They're spraying things on us to dumb us down. Maybe they're killing off the bees. Maybe they're controlling crops. Put this into perspective for us.
What we do know factually is that the late Dr. Edward Teller in 89 called for a sunscreen of sunlight-reflecting particles to be spread over the northern hemisphere to reflect about 1% of incoming sunlight. Ken Caldera did his computer simulations at Lawrence Livermore National Lab, hoping to prove Teller wrong, because as Caldera later went public and warned, this program could destroy the ozone layer, his words. Now, the air traffic controller I mentioned out on the East Coast and other controllers across the United States have been and are being told that what they're seeing on their radar screens reflected behind Air Force tankers in commanded or exclusive airspace is for the purpose of climate modification. That's what they're being told. That's what the Hughes patent describes. That's what scientists around the world, many of them anyway, are calling for. And that is what our lab tests are matching the chemicals from the fallout of these aerosols. These are definitely sunlight reflecting particles. Finally, we have two scientists actively working on the program at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, home of the HAARP technology in Ohio, on record with Columbus Alive magazine, saying, yes, it's a sunlight reflecting climate modification program A and B. These barium aerosols are also being used to conduct radar and radio waves and HAARP over the horizon for military purposes. So it's a twofer. You have a military application for communications and communication disruption. You have sunlight reflection for climate modification in hopes of staving off the worst of global warming. And thirdly, George, we know from a scientist also working on the program that perhaps one in every 100 flights introduce germs into these trails, into these plumes, not to kill people, but to make people sick enough to report to doctors and hospitals so that the dispersion of these chemical warfare simulants can be tracked.
Now, in terms of the weather modification, what percent then, William, might that be to the total of the chemtrails?
It's primary. It's the driver behind a program that is also piggybacking these other programs on it. It's the primary driver. Scientists I've talked to who advise, or I should say in the past have advised the government of Canada, were at the time, we're talking 8 years ago, panicked over what they feared would be a runaway greenhouse effect. Now, scientists of this stature are not alarmists, and they don't use words like panic. And this is some years ago. So we can say in terms of what's happening in the Arctic right now, which is drastic rapid thawing, releasing record amounts of methane, hearkening back to previous extinction events on Earth, governments are not going public, but they are running scared. And this geoengineering program is being ramped up to extremely dangerous levels.
What's going on around the Northern California area? I understand something's happening there, too.
Something very big is happening there. I'm working closely with a gentleman named Dane Wigington at geoengineeringwatch.org. In fact, I'm so busy, I don't have time to post my own articles, George, on my own website, so I'm posting them there. My latest is called Thin Ice. It will be posted shortly, along with others already online. And what we are finding out, again, this is scientifically verified, is that the thawing in the Arctic is taking place three times faster than in the lower 48, which continues to set records, thousands of records in a single month, for example, for temperature rise. So the Arctic is thawing very rapidly. Ice cover is disappearing. Interestingly, George, as we speak tonight, two ships, a Korean oil tanker and a Chinese freighter, are right now traversing the ice-free Northwest Passage of the Arctic Circle, and many more will follow, even as Shell and other oil companies prepare to cash in and ramp up their oil drilling in this very risky region. So the ice cover is, yes, it slightly recovers through the efforts of huge geoengineering attempts, but the overall trend is down. And the extent of Arctic ice we keep hearing about is actually slush. It's not thick at all, and these ships are plowing through it. Well, if this methane keeps being released, and we're talking a surge in 3 months, George, in the last 3 months, from 1,800 parts per billion to something like 2,570 parts per billion, not just over the Arctic, but over many parts of the globe. This is extremely serious because methane, for the first 100 years of release, traps 100 times more heat than carbon dioxide that we're all worried about.
Well, you know, I just had a story of a study near nuclear power plants that apparently, according to the study, says that children are not having an increased incidence of leukemia.
Yeah.
Yet there is some concern about radiation levels coming down on us, aren't
there? There should be very much concern, and anyone who believes that statement, I got a bridge I want to sell them cheap. I'm convinced that this is part of the Fukushima damage control, which is a scourge in Japan and globally. I used to live near Sendai, by the way, George. I know that area, and I'm very aware of what is happening, particularly to the children of Japan, from this ongoing fallout from the Fukushima disaster, and that, of course, being carried on the winds. I think it's safe to surmise, or unsafe to surmise, that this fallout is being carried to Earth on the particulate fallout from the aerosol geoengineering program, yet another unintended consequence of this ongoing atmospheric spraying.
Well, what are we going to do about that, if anything?
Well, we have to do all we can to shut down nuclear power and to move to alternative energy sources, as Europe is doing, as rapidly as possible. We're going to have to go there anyway. Better to do it now while we still have the means to make the transition. And if we're concerned about nuclear radiation, as we should be, we'd better be darn concerned about microwave and radio frequency radiation, which is already blanketing our classrooms and our cities. There's no difference, George, in the cellular damage, in the micronuclei fragments of destroyed cells, whether it's from nuclear or wireless radiation. Yes, they're different types of radiation, but the physical damage and medical markers are exactly the same.
So do you think the chemtrails originally started off as something where they truly wanted to take care of the atmosphere and do a good job to provide us with some kind of safety shield?
Absolutely not. It started out as a means to attempt to control the negative consequences of unrestrained carbon pollution, to permit petroleum profits and pollution as usual, not to protect anyone. The only way to protect this planet from runaway greenhouse and climate shift, or even if you want to go there, just erratic weather, is to curtail carbon burning by some 50%. There's scientific consensus on this. That's if any government truly concerned for its citizenry would go there. If any government truly concerned about corporate profits, and the corporations that drive governments will do anything to continue this petroleum pollution. And that is the real reason behind aerosol or so-called chemtrails. It's damage control for a carbon that is only ramping up the extreme acidification of the ocean that covers most of this planet. I mean, we've been there, the planet has been there before. Humans haven't, but the planet has. And acidification has knocked out some 90% of life in the oceans. And the rates of acidification now are far faster than those times 155 and 75 million years ago.
We're going to get some real stories of chemtrails and some questions for you when we return. William Thomas with us. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you're a Coast Insider, you can chat tomorrow, 8 p.m. Pacific time, with my co-author of Talking to the Dead, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. That room fills up awfully fast, so jump on board. And welcome back to Coast, William Thomas with us as we talk about chemtrails. We'll take your calls in a moment. William, are you concerned that if this continues, it could wipe us out?
Actually, I'm becoming that concerned, George, particularly in terms of Ken Caldera's warning. I mentioned him earlier about the shredding of the ozone layer from these aerosol spraying. Right now, we're seeing UVB levels up some 1,200% in Northern California, which I'm calling a climate sacrifice zone. In fact, they're not alone. Canadian scientists today are expressing public alarm over rapidly rising levels of ultraviolet radiation. Again, the only explanation for this are the aerosols, which are providing a platform for CFC and other ozone shredding chemicals to accrete around. So the geoengineering definitely could sterilize the planet. We're already seeing whales getting severely sunburned and fish developing skin cancers, George, from increasing solar radiation. And of course, if the phytoplankton that provide half of our oxygen continue to die off, they're down over 40% now due to ocean surface temperature changes and ultraviolet, we're toast, basically.
Let's talk about the chemtrails, William, in that if they never did this, and it's been going on for 20 plus years, if they never did this, what would be going on in the atmosphere today?
It's hard to say. The trend would be we would be even warmer than we are now. We saw after 9/11, when all the airliners were grounded, you recall, temperatures jumped 1 degree Fahrenheit over those 3 days, showing the incredible, powerful masking effects of artificially induced cloud cover. In this sense, in this case, it was contrails. So we can infer from there that the deliberately induced aerosols or so-called chemtrails are definitely masking the true extent of warming. But I suspect that public alarm and public pressure would have resulted in action to reduce carbon emissions instead of allowing their continued record-breaking rise. So we probably would be much better off if this program had never been started. We'd also have an ozone layer that would be continue to recover after the international banning of CFCs, instead of an ozone layer that is shredding even as we speak. So all in all, this geoengineering program has been a complete disaster and is, I can say, synergistically amplifying and unpredictably amplifying any effects of solar radiation warming.
Okay, let's take some calls. First-time caller, Mark, truck driving in Georgia. Mark, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Good evening, George.
Hi, Mark.
I just got one question, you know, and I'm not trying to criticize your guest or anything, but
understand.
One guest is where the ice sheets are shrinking. Last week we had a guest on that said that the ice sheets were growing by 60%.
And they are.
So how is the globe getting better? How is the Earth getting warmer then?
Here's the confusing part with that, Mark. In some regions of the planet, the ice sheets are melting. Greenland, for example, is melting. But in other areas, specifically around the Arctic, it's been a 60% increase in the past few years of ice. I'll let you jump in here, William.
Right, but let's be careful here in what we're talking about. If we measure ice thickness, and that's being done by satellite in the Arctic, though not so much in the Antarctic. While natural variability is showing a slight increase, you're right, in ice cover down there. But in the high Arctic, where some people are talking about this miraculous ice sheet recovery, what they're really talking about is a very thin layer of slush
and it's not a true ice sheet, as those ships are demonstrating in traversing that region even as we speak. With temperatures of 89 degrees in the Arctic this summer, and these methane releases I'm mentioning from the rapidly thawing permafrost and Arctic Ocean seafloor, there's absolutely no question that it's the trend is definitely heating up there, and the ice melt trend, despite temporary recoveries, is, I just looked at a graph a few minutes ago, steeply downwards. Don't be misled by people or news programs talking about an ice sheet recovery. It's really a bunch of slush up there, and the last big cyclone in July scattered it far and wide.
One of my guests, Robert Felix, thinks we're in the beginning of an ice age, William.
Well, the temperatures we're seeing aren't bearing that out. In March 2012, we saw more than 3,000 heat records in that month alone broken in the U.S. We could go on and on with quite a lot of detail about overall average global temperatures rising to record-breaking levels uninterrupted for over the past decade. So it's true to say that we should be on track for another ice age in terms of where the Earth is, in terms of solar orbit, things like that. But in actual fact, we're not cooling toward an ice age. We're warming up toward runaway meltdown if these methane releases continue. These are really drastic. I can't emphasize that enough.
Okay, we go to Mike in Massachusetts, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Michael. Go ahead.
Well, you know, it sounds like gobbledygook to me. I mean, let's face it. Both of the poles have shown more ice. So aren't we more in line for a global cooling than global warming? And I'll hang up and listen.
Some say yes. William, you say no.
Okay, let's look at what's actually physically going on. Aside of polar bears drowning because there's no more ice flows, not enough ice flows for them to get up on and rest, let's look at the jet stream. The jet stream drives our weather. I think all of our listeners will agree that weather is being increasingly disrupted. It's in our faces. It's in our daily headlines. We can also agree that the jet stream is the main driver of our weather. Now, American and other scientists have demonstrated that the loss of thick ice cover in the high Arctic is causing high pressure areas over the Arctic to stall or fragment the jet stream, with the downstream result of so-called embedded weather patterns. A more common name for that in the US of A would be drought. So the jet stream is absolutely demonstrably being disrupted as a result of decreased overall Arctic ice cover and as a result of frantically, desperately increased geoengineering attempts. And that disruption of the jet stream is disrupting our weather and leading to things like prolonged drought. And if this continues, we're not just looking at prolonged drought across the southwestern United States, but a loss of monsoons over Asia and India that could result in the deaths or extreme privation of some 2 billion people. So these geoengineering programs, in conjunction with what is already happening, regardless of how we want to debate the numbers, what is already actually happening is exceedingly dangerous.
Before we go back to more calls, want to give us a smart meter update? What's going on there?
Yeah, I just spent most of the day, George, before this program, once again preparing reports and documentation to fend off our little island here off the coast of Vancouver Island from the corporate smart meter attack. So far, we're resisting them, George, using common law very effectively. That is our private claim of rights to keep these things off our homes. It's just, regardless of what anyone thinks about these things, it's been long demonstrated since the 1950s and earlier that continued exposure to microwaves and radio frequencies result in a host of medical effects, none of them good, including neurological damage, cancers, and depletion of and reduction of the immune system. Now, smart meters represent a 24/7 exposure. I'm not going on the air tonight and saying that everyone with a smart meter in their house is going to get sick or their family is going to get sick. But in fact, a minimum, we're seeing 10% of the population will show immediate symptoms of extreme fatigue, bloody noses, and worse. And that number is going to increase rapidly as these exposures continue. Children and the elderly and the ill are most effective. And why in the world would we risk our children for something like smart meters, which, by the way, save no energy whatsoever? We're going to take the same amount of showers and cook the same meals, whether we have a smart meter or not. And in fact, are a disguise for 24/7 surveillance and corporate control.
So if people have smart meters on their homes right now, can they get rid of them? Can they get them off if they want to?
Well, in California, you can, thanks to some lawsuits that have been won, and people are allowed to so-called opt out of a program they never opted into at very steep fees. Other states are following suit. I noted tonight, George, before going on air, that some counties like Brent and others in Texas are firing their town council people for allowing smart meters in the first place. So the good news is there's a growing public backlash, and it's gaining traction. And this whole idea of personal sovereignty and personal choice over what we will be exposed to and what we will not be exposed to, I'm hopeful can carry over to the aerosol, quote, chemtrail program. We're seeing a resurgence of insistence on personal choice worldwide.
Let's go to Paul, Folsom, California, west of the Rockies. Paul, you're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Paul.
So, yeah, I'm in California, so it sounds like I'm in the thick of everything.
You sure are.
So I've been looking into chemtrails for a few years, and I've noticed people talking about what's in them and the tests that you do, you know, test the soil, test your hair.
Yeah.
To see all the chemicals that are rising. But my thought would be, why not take a test directly from the air? Why not get an airplane, strap on a air filter or two, and just fly through them? You know, if that's ever been done before.
Interesting idea. Has that been done before, William?
I have no reliable reports of that being done, rumors of it being done. As a former pilot, I can tell you it's extremely difficult. First of all, as I mentioned, those Air Force tankers fly in commanded airspace. It means that no other airplane is allowed near them. So it's difficult to get at their flight level and hold out a metaphorical bucket and catch what they're spraying. So, and you have to get up there to grab it directly from those aircraft. So that is next to impossible. What we are doing is, and have been doing for years, is gathering fallout, either direct particulate fallout scraped off windshields of cars, for example, or rain and or snow that has fallen through observed chemtrails or aerosols and then lab tested. And those results are consistent and conclusive, showing very high levels of aluminum oxide and often barium. And sometimes, I'm thinking of Espanola, Ontario, for example, high levels of quartz particulates. The barium and the aluminum match many of the proposals for geoengineering, and the aluminum, of course, matches the Hughes patent, which laid this whole thing out.
Good point. Denny's now in Tampa, Florida. Hi, Denny.
Hi. Hi, guys.
Hey.
I'm sitting here taking notes while you're talking.
Perfect.
I have so much on my mind about this, and I float around in my pool at dusk, and I watch as they lay down the chemtrails. So I called the airbase, and I asked McDill. I said, I talked to the flight control guy at McDill, and I said, what are they doing? I mean, I see this every night, and they're using the almost alien technology where it's there's no sound to these planes.
Mm-hmm.
They're so high up that there's no sound at all. And he said, even if I could tell you, I wouldn't be able to, you know. Or, you know, he said, even if I knew, that's what he said. Even if I knew, I couldn't tell you. That's what he told me.
Well, yeah, I expected that, I think. William?
Well, it's certainly not alien technology, with respect. The KC-135s, which are the very old Boeing 707 variant, have been retrofitted with hush kits to silence their engines. So noisy, the 707 was finally banned from most airports. And also, as the caller correctly noted, they're at such high altitude, they can't be heard. People in Laos and Cambodia found that out to their dismay during those B-52 ArcLight bombing raids, where entire villages would suddenly disappear from the aircraft overhead that they never heard or saw. So there's our natural explanations. Fortunately, as I say, we do have air traffic controllers that have come forward, and Air Force people at air shows, for example, George, who have said things like, yeah, we got them, but we're not supposed to talk about it. Something that's difficult to corroborate or substantiate, but we have enough off-the-cuff remarks like that to make a pattern. These are definitely a military project, and they're definitely aerosol spray.
Is it going to stop, or is it getting worse?
It's getting worse. As the Arctic situation in particular heats up, literally, this program is being ramped up. You might know, remember, George, last March I was watching weather radar over the eastern seaboard of the United States, and you might recall these new terms of how rain suddenly flashed into snow, and we were seeing snow showers there and over Northern California, by the way, with air temperatures of 40 degrees Fahrenheit. Patently impossible under natural circumstances, but the geoengineers are now using ice nucleating chemicals to desperately try to cool atmospheric temperatures. What's happening over Northern California, which reported, I got a call 2 days ago, 112 degree Fahrenheit temperatures, no rain for many months, is that the moisture over Northern California that normally be there is being hijacked and diverted northward toward the Arctic. And that's why I call at least Northern California a climate sacrifice zone.
Are there other regions in the country that might be more prevalent with chemtrails than the other?
Over my many years covering this story, I would say that Phoenix is a hot spot. The American Southwest has consistently been very high. And also here in my part of the planet, the Northwest, I'm north of the border here, but we can talk about Seattle and Portland, have been consistently very high, even as NASA has been reporting a very sharp decline in normal contrails because of changed atmospheric conditions, as they explain it. Now, they've done detailed studies, and they keep telling us contrails are down, and people on the ground keep saying, but the plumes in the sky are increasing.
All right, if you want to track more information on William Thomas and his work on chemtrails and smart meters, his website, willthomasonline.net, which is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back in just a moment, Stephen Quayle joins us as we talk about true legends, the GridX, a shutdown of the power grid coming up, why, and much more.